Hello everybody, round two. We're here again. We've made it. It wasn't a complete flop. Well, we don't think it was, so here we go again. I'm Ian from Alcohol Uncensored, and we're back again with Kelly, who is the founder and head honcho at Alcohol Uncensored. Hello, Kelly. How are you doing?
Good evening, Ian. I'm good. I like that head honcho. It sounds head better honcho than founder. How's your week been?
It's been all right, actually. Back into the swing of things now in January, and tired, because like suddenly everyone wants a piece of you again, if you know what I mean. Everyone's back to sort of badgering you, but I'm not complaining. I've had a good week, thanks. How about
you? You're smashing the 75 hard as well, though, aren't you?
I don't want to peak too early, but I'm enjoying it at the moment. Yeah. So yes,
I've dropped out already. I think I lasted 7 days, and then the Maltesers were calling me.
Well, actually, for the listeners, Kelly's already confessed that she's going to hit the Maltesers hard after this.
I sure am.
Yeah.
I sure am.
It's all right, though, isn't it? It's all right. And it's not just the two of us tonight, is it?
It's not.
We've got one of the OGs, one of the first people, in fact, the first person I ever met IRL when I stopped drinking.
This is who I call Susan, who we're going to introduce this now. She is my non-AA sponsor. I have an AA sponsor who keeps me on track, and then I have Susan, who has been a massive, massive help to me.
If in the case of emergency, break glass and call
exactly.
Susan.
Yeah. And Susan thinks I hit that glass far too often, don't you, Susan?
Definitely not.
So we've got Susan McGarry, who both Kelly and I are very good friends with and have known now for, I'm going to guess, at least 5 years, I would say. Four. Oh, I always over-egg it.
Yeah. Getting on for 5 years.
Getting on for five years, definitely. Yeah. And I always remember our first IRL meeting, when we went for a drink, didn't we? And then we went for ice cream near where I live, near Newcastle. And we had a very good chinwag, didn't we?
We did. But before anyone thinks, what's he talking about? We went for a drink. We went for a huge pizza and a glass of Coke followed by ice cream. Yeah. That's what we went for.
Yeah, so. Actually, I've forgotten the pizza. I just remember the ice cream and the drink. But you're right, we went for a pizza. Well, look, the pizza was with the ice cream, wasn't it? That's right, yeah. Thank you. Anyway, Susan, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me here. Really appreciate the invite.
Do you really appreciate the invite? Because we all admitted we were a bit nervous, didn't we, before we jumped on. We're not pros at this, are we?
No, I think that's apparent. But no, I do appreciate the invite, because I think when you're a long time alcohol-free, you kind of feel like you've got nothing new to say. And it's been interesting with you inviting me on this, is reflecting on my own journey as opposed to thinking about other people's journeys.
Yes. So before we go into too much detail and start encouraging Susan just to delve back into the memory banks and talk about her early days of being alcohol free and what happened before she decided to stop drinking and all the rest of it, just to summarise where we hope we're going to try and get to with some of these podcasts. So we're going to do them weekly for the foreseeable, aren't we, Kelly? We're not giving ourselves any grand plans to sort of reach the hundreds or anything like that, but at the moment we're enjoying it and we think it's going well, and we think we've got plenty to say and we've got plenty of guests, either fellow hosts from within Alcohol Uncensored, like Susan and I, or perhaps some members within Alcohol Uncensored.
Yeah, definitely.
And we've also got some people from outside the community. So that's kind of the thrust of what we're doing. And the idea of these podcasts is to give people a bit of an eye into what happens within the Alcohol Uncensored community, who some of the members are, who some of the hosts are, what it's all about, how it might differ to other things, and hopefully why it might be of interest to people to actually join as a member and get involved. And the other part of this chat, which it'll always just go down that route, is just having a damn good chat about alcohol-free life, which is, I'm sure, what we're going to be doing today with Susan. So without further ado, Susan, would you mind telling us a bit about your backstory in terms of who you are and where you're from, in the words of Cilla Black? Just a bit about sort of, you know, what got you to being alcohol-free and what got you to that point in the first place?
Okay, well, thank you for the lovely introductions. I live in North Yorkshire, and I'm originally from London, but I've lived in Yorkshire for 30 plus years. And I stopped drinking. My 5 year sobriversary is this weekend.
Ooh.
So, yeah, because I was a failed dry January. Is that a word? Dry January.
It is now.
It is now. But yes, so for anyone who is doing dry January at the moment, keep going. Because I didn't succeed at it, but dusted myself off and treated it as a blip and kept on going to say to myself, right, I can do a dry February then, you know, like a dry month, 31 days, and then decided to do another month and another month. And that's what I did. So to now be 5 years alcohol free, which just sounds insane.
Bloody amazing.
It is. It is. And something I never believed would be possible. I was not in the least bit confident about becoming alcohol free, and nor was I confident that that's what I actually wanted as well. But, you know, it's like I knew what I didn't want, and what I didn't want was the life I was living.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're feeling like that and you know what you don't want, at least take a step in some direction, which is what I did by removing alcohol and at least trying to get somewhere where I felt happier and more capable and, yeah, just stronger as well, because, you know, alcohol was taking all those things off me mentally.
So tell us a bit about what was going wrong. Because I said last week when we had a chat, I for ages was going around this like circuit of 1 minute telling myself I needed to stop drinking. The next minute I was telling myself I didn't have a problem and everything was all right. And everybody drank like me. And I could find plenty of people who, you know, were drinking more than me. And off I go again. And then I'd try a few days off and then it'd all go wrong. And just life was just crap, if you know what I mean. Not crap, but it just wasn't serving me. But what was life like for you, Susan, before you actually decided enough was enough?
I think on the outside, it was successful. I had actually thought of stopping drinking for quite a number of years. I knew that my drinking was progressing. And as time was going on, I knew I was drinking more and I was finding it difficult to stop. So I probably bought my first alcohol-free book, or Quitlet, as I found out it was called. I bought that about 15 years before I actually stopped drinking. I did read it, didn't like it and kind of ignored it. But it was really the last couple of years prior to me stopping drinking that I was really on the merry-go-round with it. I was always quite comfortable with calling myself a heavy drinker. You know, for me, the weekends were drinking Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sometimes Thursday, you know, but I was very conscious that even days I'd say to myself were meant to be alcohol-free, I'd still have a couple of drinks. You know, because it was alcohol free, because I didn't have a not alcohol free. I didn't lie to myself that much, but it was different kind of drinking. But that just got harder and harder. And I've always been overweight and I decided to address my weight. So I started to look after myself with regards to my food and all of that. And like, to be honest, I'd always eaten well. And I would absolutely have said the reason that I was overweight was because of drink. Because, you know, the empty calories that I had. And it probably was because I was in a habit of not eating as much in order to have plenty of calories left for booze. But clearly, I didn't have plenty of calories left because otherwise I wouldn't have been overweight. But anyway, so I started losing weight. And a part of that, I had to curtail my drinking. So I was kind of no drinking during the week and I drink at weekends. And my drinking actually reduced for about a year and a half, 2 years before I actually stopped. Yeah. And by being exposed to that and really thinking about, right, what am I having? What days am I drinking? All of this, as opposed to before, I had no parameters. I deserved a drink on a Monday because I've been at work. You know, there was no boundaries for me. And that did get me questioning my drinking even more, even though from the outside, I probably was successfully moderating. But I was, you know, only drinking at weekends, which was really my measure of success. The fact that I was probably having 30 units a week didn't really come into it. So it did give me an opportunity to reflect and all of that. And then I ended up doing sober October and then had periods of not drinking, you know, like 7 days or 2 weeks, that kind of thing. And it was always an effort. You know, it never, in all that time, it never came easy. But I wanted to lose weight more than I wanted to carry on drinking every day.
So for me, it was kind of it was a physical and mental thing. It was physical, you know, I had hangovers lots of times, but a lot of the time it was just that sort of feeling of crapness. And it was actually more the anxiety and the mental health. I wouldn't have called it mental health at the time, but I kind of knew it was affecting my moods and it was affecting my ability to think straight. And I was thinking negatively a lot more. And what was it with you? Would you say was it a health thing or was it a mental thing? Or could you not really categorize it in one of two ways, if you know what I mean?
I can. I started off, like I said, because I wanted to lose weight. I was aware then it was really causing me anxiety. A menopause hit, so I was struggling with that. I was fast approaching burnout at work and was using alcohol to get me through that. And my sleep as well was really bad. And when it came to my sleep, it was like I removed caffeine, I lost loads of weight, I did this, I was meditating, I was doing all of these things, but I wasn't removing, you know, the big elephant in the room was 3.5 bottles a week or 4 bottles a week, whatever it was. So I knew that it was causing probably some of my issues. But I had managed with my relationship with alcohol over the years, whilst I had read a book, it had been a book about stopping drinking rather than the book about what alcohol was doing to me. So I was still able to sort of be a bit quite blinkered mm-hmm. with regards to mm-hmm. my attitude to alcohol, because mm-hmm. I didn't want to be educated.
Yeah.
So yeah. I would say mostly it would be that the long-term reason would definitely be for mental health.
Yeah.
Reason.
Yeah.
And the circle that alcohol brings in you when you're drinking and you have that cognitive dissonance, like Annie Grace talks about, the mental health then, that you're on a spiral, because then it's making your mental health worse, because you're consistently then beating yourself up for doing mm-hmm. something that you don't want to do. So, yeah. you know, you might have started off a bit higher up, but because you don't want to do it, that's impact. It's psychologically, you've got that impact on top of the impact of the actual alcohol, which yeah. is a depressant as well. So it's like a double whammy. And that's yeah. where I was at with it.
Yeah, all right. So you got to the middle of January, if you like, and that's when you decided that you were going to go for it, and it ended up being ultimately the streak you're on now, because it's been with Trivial saying it's a streak, isn't it? But what happened differently this time that hadn't worked before, if you know what I mean? What made the difference?
I think I'd started from the November previous, and I decided to do a month in November, and there was lockdowns, and then we were coming out, and where were we on tier 2 and tier 1, if anyone remembers all of that. Mm-hmm. And I found all of that very frustrating, and the lack of control within my life, I found that very difficult. Anyway, so what I did was I started journaling from day one. I signed up for a challenge, and it says write about alcohol, and, you know, I don't know what I'm going to write. And that's what I've written in my journal. I don't know what I'm going to write about alcohol. Well, then 8-10 pages later, because it just opened up this whole mm-hmm. thing that I was being able to be truly honest with myself and say yeah. things that I would not prepare to voice to any living human being. And you know, we all have that, those things that we know in our heart of hearts what should be mm-hmm. doing, and we don't want to listen to it. So what I did from day one was I got help, albeit help where I was a listener. I did a challenge. I joined a number of things, you know, like a 30-day program where I've got mm-hmm. a video every day. And I've reread my journal in order to remind myself for this today. And I did what they told me to do. That's what I did. If someone said, do a gratitude, I didn't say I'm shit at gratitude. I mean, clearly I was shit at gratitude because I didn't think I was worthy and capable or had succeeded at anything. So I wrote down gratitude, and then I practiced it because I did my journal every day. I didn't say to myself, I'm no good at journaling. I might have written down what I'm writing is a load of rubbish, but I still wrote down the rubbish, and I wrote down my feelings. If they said, try and do an affirmation, I tried to do an affirmation. Yeah. And I've read back my journal today, and it's really touching. You know, that I can look back, because I can be blasé now, 5 years, and yeah. Don't give me any attention, and, you know, all of this, because I don't do this other thing right in my life, and all of this sort of stuff. And it was really quite touching reading my journal. But clearly, I did what I was told to do. I educated myself. I reflected on it as well. And I think that's the thing. We can listen to podcasts, and we can read books, and there's certain books like Alcohol Explained really had an impact on me. Music helped me as well. And I did look on Spotify, there was a particular album, but you know, like angry music, you know, helped me. A bit of Skunk and Nancy and Alanis Morissette, because I'm off a certain age, people. Things like that really helped me. But what I did do was I reflected. I reflected, and I was completely honest with myself. And even when I've written, what would I like? I wrote, I would like to be able to take or leave alcohol. And the next line says, I will never be able to do that.
Yeah. Can I just ask, you talk about, obviously, this was a group or some sort of community, or I don't know how you describe it, but was it online? Were you sort of posting? Yeah. So was it Zooms, or was it sort of all?
No, there was no Zooms. That's what I mean. I was a listener.
Right.
I was a listener. I got a video. Annie Grace does a free 30-day alcohol experiment. And so you get a video every day. It gives you things to think
I see.
about. And there were other groups as well, and I did those, but I was an observer in these.
So you didn't have to interact with anybody. You were just
didn't
you,
have,
you,
yeah.
you did
I
it
didn't
all
have to
on
tell
your own,
anyone.
right? Yeah.
All I told was my journal. Didn't have to tell anyone.
Just listen to you there, Susan. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, you said kind of at the beginning that you didn't find it easy. And it sounds like it wasn't easy for you in the beginning, one, to remove the alcohol from your life, but also as well to do the work that was being asked of you. But it just shows you how much you wanted it. And also,
yes,
it's quite sad to hear how down on yourself you were at that point, because you just, it sounds like you didn't have any confidence in yourself, but you just had hope that something would change in your life. Would it be right to say that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my affirmation was, I am as worthy and capable as anyone on the planet to not drink today.
Yeah.
And that makes me well up a bit.
Yeah.
You know, but that for me, it kept it in the day, and it was like, I can do this. But, you know, I didn't have any faith in myself that I would be able to do it. So that was my affirmation, was reminding myself that I am capable to do it.
Say that again, please, if you don't mind.
I am
worthy.
I'm
not trying to make you
cry.
I'm not trying to make you cry, Sue.
No, it's okay. No, it's okay. Yeah. I'm over it now. I only get emotion briefly nowadays. I am as worthy and capable as anyone on this planet to not drink today.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that.
You know, when I was getting triggers, and there's another thing, you know, I worked through what my triggers were. I would say that to myself during the day.
Yeah.
You know, and I would look around and think, that person's not drinking today. That person's not drinking today. They're probably not thinking about it like I'm thinking about it. But if that person can do it, I can do it for today.
What were your triggers, Susan? Do you mind sharing them? Like, what your triggers were at the beginning, and did they change?
Reward was a huge trigger, that I deserved it.
Yeah.
I'd say my awareness of them changed, Kelly.
Yeah.
Okay, so at the start, I would do very practical things, as in, right, I have this event, what's going to happen, this person's going to say this, I'm going to do this, and I would write out what I'm going to do in order to not drink. So the reward thing, you know, on the way home from work, oh, I'll just veer into Morrison's and get a bottle of wine, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And even that one, that I deserve it, I'd sit there. And I always remember this about someone who used to really wind me up at work. Oh, she pressed my buttons. I won't name her, right? She was kind of, I ran a service. And what she did was, she did, you know, like a central service that said, we think you can do this better, you know, which obviously was always going to get my back up. So anyway, she pressed my buttons, right? And I remember sat there thinking to myself, that person don't give a shit whether I ever drink tonight.
Yeah.
So who do I hurt if I have a drink tonight?
Yeah.
Who do I go against what I want to achieve? She's going to go home, either have a drink herself, have nice times with the kids, whatever. You know, she wasn't a bad woman. She would just, you know, press my buttons. And that really helped me as well, to say that and get that perspective.
Do you know what I'm thinking as you're talking? I'm thinking, this is like a sales pitch towards alcohol and sensitive, unshamed, if you know what I mean. But I'm thinking, it sounds quite lonely. It sounds like you've done it all on your own. And I'm sure it wasn't like that. I'm sure you had people to communicate with and chart your progress and all the rest of it. But when I think back, and that was only 5 years ago, but it sounds, I don't want to use the word primitive, but it sounds hard and lonely. And like, compared to, say, Alcohol Uncensored, where there's lots of tools you can tap into, if you know what I mean. And it does sound like a sales pitch, and we'll come on to that in a minute. But do you understand what I mean, Susan? Because you obviously, you've been part of bigger communities since then, obviously. But would you agree with that?
Completely. I was completely lonely. I never shared anything with anyone here because I had an element of shame. Mm-hmm. And when I did try to talk, people would talk about their relationship with alcohol, and I had a lot of angst, and I didn't talk to anyone about it. And so I did start listening to podcasts, and they were really helpful. And I stumbled on Over the Influence and joined Over the Influence on the day it started. And because I'm not one for writing forum posts, I wasn't even on Facebook. I joined Facebook when I got alcohol free, because I needed some sober love. And I remember the first Zoom that I did, I may well have cried, because I had never spoken to anyone about being alcohol free. I had never been with people who could say, oh yeah, I know that feeling. I know that feeling, you know. So yeah, it was lovely. And you're right, there's more on offer now. And also, I'm still a Zoom person. I am still, I prefer a chat. I fuss too much over a post. If I'm going to write something down, it'll take me 2 hours, and then I'll still do a typo and beat myself up for it. And I fuss too much, and I overthink things. So having a chat on a Zoom is much more my cup of tea.
I can agree with that. So I know you want to say something, Kelly. I can agree with that because whenever I've messaged you about something, and then on WhatsApp, you always say like Susan is typing, and then I'll think, right, where is it? It's coming. It must be coming in a minute. 5 minutes later, Susan is typing. You're like, and then you get this like four lines. You think, well, that kind of took that amount of time.
She's been typing for 2 days.
Talk about making me sound like a Luddite.
No.
You know, I get a bit bored as well. I get a bit bored with it, and I start typing and go, oh, I can't really be asked at the moment, and I'm terrible. So I do get a bit bored, not just with you, Ian.
Oh, I know. I'm not taking it personally.
So, Susan, you said you went on that first Zoom with OTI. Did you go on that Zoom with Over the Influence and think, all right, okay, this is for me. I love this, and I'm going to keep coming back. What was your feeling going on it and then after it?
That is exactly what I thought. I love this, and I'm going to keep coming back. That is exactly what I thought. Because it was quite varied. I liked the fact that it was mixed because I had joined a different group, but it was predominantly women, and I'd only done a couple of Zooms, and not that I'm against the sisterhood. But at the time, what I wanted was more of a mixed thing, mixed opinions. I didn't want to be just with people like me. I wanted a more diverse kind of different experiences, different age groups. You know, I didn't want just middle-aged women chatting. There's nothing wrong with that because obviously that's what I am. But so I absolutely felt this is for me. This is where I need to be, and this is what will give me strength to keep on going. I mean, I was 6 months into my alcohol-free journey then, and I had already decided and told people that I was done with alcohol. I had decided in the May, to be honest, as soon as I managed to string a couple of months together, I was like, holy moly, I think I might be onto something here that I could actually succeed. And you know, it's like because I think I was doing all the work where I was writing down, these are the reasons I want to do it, this is the reason, this is what I felt good about today, you know, looking for those positive things in each day. You know, my heart rate, things like that, just you know, my heart rate went down 8 beats a minute within 8 days. And then the community, you know, I just kept coming back for more. Really, and it really did give me strength. It gave me solace, and yeah, I found it really comforting. I learned from other people. I used to hear that thing about, oh, find your tribe, and you know, I used to think, yeah, whatever. But my tribe is alcohol-free people on Zoom, you know. So, like when you started Alcohol Uncensored, it was really right. This is a no-brainer for me to join this and keep that sober love in my life.
I want to do a book of alcohol-free buzzwords and sentences, and find your tribe would definitely be under F, I reckon, because there's loads of that. That's one of them, isn't it? There's so many wanky buzzwords, and that could be one of them. And what we're going to try and do, if we keep going with these podcasts, we need to introduce a wanky buzzword every week, Kelly.
Yeah.
Oh my
I'm glad you
God.
used the word this week. I get told
Well,
off
I know your mother told you
last
off, so
week.
I thought, well, if I use it, she can't tell me off. So, yeah. Right, Susan, I always remember your podcast from OTI. It was a few after. Actually, I didn't like you at the time because I did mine first, and then you did yours a few weeks later, and everybody was gushing over yours, and it was
I
absolutely sort of
killed it, didn't I?
like you nailed it. You absolutely nailed it. And I was thinking, I like Susan, but I don't like what she's done to me because she's like, she's just kicked me into the side there. So yeah. Anyway, I've got over it now. But yeah, it was so good. And it was always the one everyone referred to because they always gave them titles, didn't they? And they gave them the
Susan the
cross.
Believer.
There you go. The
That's it.
belief. Susan the believer. And tell us why it was the believer. Before you do that, I always remember we've spoke about this since as well. It's about personal values. And when that was first explained to me, I thought, I don't know what that means. But then I kind of a good chat with you and I did understand. Would you mind telling us one, why it was called the believer, and two, tell us a bit about personal values and why that's so important to you.
Right, well, thank you very much for that. And yes,
You
the
bugger.
podcast. The podcast was really, I mean, the feedback I got and continue to get was really, really good and really positive. And like anyone going on a podcast, I was really nervous and trying to get the right balance. And Shaz and Ben obviously steered me well, as are you two, I'll add, as are you
Thank you very
two.
much. Well, well,
We're
well, well
much slacker
recovered.
than those two.
Well recovered.
So I found it really hard to go alcohol free, right? And I realize now there's lots I've learned since, okay, that I can look back at the time of my life. I can see why I found it difficult. I've touched on there about burnout at work, and I can see how vulnerable I was feeling as well. And then it was all tied up because I'd lost weight. You know, everyone felt I should be happy. I felt I should be happy. Why aren't I happy? You know, so then I stopped drinking. Still wasn't bloody happy. I stopped smoking. Still wasn't bloody happy. So clearly, I had other issues going on where I needed to address other things in my life and also nurture myself a lot more, because when I was drinking, you know, I wasn't nurturing myself for the previous 20, 30 years. It had been, you know, drink work. So it was really learning to nurture myself and listen to myself. And so, you know, like whilst I was embracing podcasts and I joined OTI, the Zoom community, and I was enjoying that, I was still finding it really hard. And I remember even 6 months in, well, longer than 6 months in, I still felt like an exposed nerve is how I described it. Still felt really raw. And people used to go, oh, yeah, I'm really, you know, 1 month in, I'm killing it, and, you know, all of that. And I wanted to trip them up, really. So I felt like you, Ian, over the podcast. So the reason it was called The Believer is I was talking about this, and because the only way is through, and that is what I'd say to myself, the only way is through this, because I don't want to go back. You know, I know that back is not the right way for me. So the only way is to get through. And the way to do that is to believe other people, you know, and believe what other people are saying, that it will get better, it does get easier. So that is why they called it The Believer. And that podcast was done on my 1 year anniversary 4 years ago. So that was the first one. So yeah, that's why it was.
Right. Before we go on to values, Kelly's got a quick question for you.
Yeah, so I was just going to say there, I think that's it's so powerful though, the fact that you told everyone that you didn't find it easy, because I think there's a lot of kind of positivity out there that it's like when you remove alcohol from your life, everything's great. And it's not always like that. That it's everyone feels it different. Everyone takes a bit longer to find that happiness or contentment or to start finding it easier. So I think the fact that you were so honest about it, that's why you got so much good feedback, because I think that's what people needed to hear, because it's not easy. It's like, and I love what you said there about you knew you didn't want to go back. It's remembering that, isn't it? Like you don't want to go back, because it's so easy to be pulled back into that, going for that one drink, but that one drink takes you all the way back to the start, doesn't it?
Before I stopped drinking, I used to worry about what people thought, because was I drinking too much? You know, I was like, a lot of my drinking was kind of work related, if you know what I mean, like networking and, you know, lunches and time in the pub with clients and things like that. And I used to think, God, I hope people don't think I'm drinking too much and what have you. And then when I stopped drinking, I used to go to the pub and try and sort, or I'd see them and think, I hope people don't think I'm boring because I don't drink anymore. And I went from one set of worries to another set of worries. And if anything, it got worse because I wasn't quelling it with or quashing it with drink. I had to live all these emotions suddenly started flooding to the surface. So it actually, I don't want to put people off having to go stopping drinking, but it can in some ways get harder in the short term. And I think, you know, that's not unusual. So yeah, I think you're right, Kelly.
That really struck me as I was rereading my journal. And I'd written, you know, one of the reasons I stopped drinking was because I wanted to stop thinking about alcohol. And there I was 3 months later thinking about alcohol, doing my gratitude diary, thinking about my triggers. How can I deal with that? And it was like, oh, Jesus Christ, can I turn this volume down? You know? But then it is, and this is the positive thing about when you do a journal, you can see it's not all the time. Your inner chimp wants to say, this is all the time. I'm doing it all the time. I want to be really dramatic and catastrophic and all of that. Whereas when you journal, you think, well, no, you know, let's be honest, it was half hour of the 24 hours in the day. It was half hour I was really pissed off. And it helps you learn to keep things in perspective, because we're so used to doing that knee jerk. I have an emotion I don't particularly like, or I don't feel comfortable, or, you know, I feel a bit of adrenaline, so I'm going to have a drink. And by trying to slow that down and create that gap where you think, I'm not going to have a drink, and these are the reasons I'm not going to have a drink, it gives you the opportunity to reflect as well, to stop yourself that it's not all bad. I have plenty of times, whilst we talk about, I found it hard. I did find it hard, but there is plenty of times, even a week in, that I said, I feel happy. Yeah. I feel happy. I feel free. I feel hope. I feel that, you know, there are times there. And when the times were tough, I knew I have had days where I've been happy. This isn't every day is crap, yeah. You know, for 24 hours. And I was a lot more realistic about how it was going to be. It was boring thinking more about alcohol. That bit was boring. That's true.
Yeah. It's a shame we haven't got more time, because I think we could talk quite a long time about mindfulness and journaling and just being aware of your thoughts and what's actually going through your head. Again, you know, thinking back to when I was drinking, and actually in the early days of stopping drinking, I didn't do the amount of work you did in terms of journaling and being mindful of my thoughts. But if I had, you're absolutely right. There was so much time I was buzzing. I was buzzing because I knew I'd struck on something. I'm really keen before we do go to talk about values and something that you're big on values, if you know what I mean. And I think it's kind of something that I always associate with chatting to you, is you do, within the alcohol and sensitive community, you do workshops on values. Do you mind telling us a bit about what that's about, please?
Yeah. Well, I got coaching, and one of the things she asked me was about my values, and I didn't have any, really. And it was like, well, how do you decide what you do? And so I did quite a lot of work on my values. What are they? You know, again, as part of this self-reflection and all of this. And because the thing is, with one of the reasons, and this is something you start to think about, is why did I drink? You know, and I did not want to open that box as to why I drank. You know, there has been a lot of trauma in my life, and I wanted that box kept shut, right? Which was a tough, because I couldn't keep the lid on. So when we were talking about values, I was really aware that one of the reasons I drank was to handle my emotions and handle difficult feelings and all of that, as well as stress and all those other things that we do. So for me, it was like a real getting to know myself, because who am I if I don't drink? So, you know, work hard, play hard kind of person. You know, I can be quite flippant and I'm very independent and all of that. So I started to look at my values, and it's been very iterative, I would say, that my values, when I was first working on them, some of them were probably too aspirational, you know, and I'd say kind of what I want to do. So over the years, I've honed what my values are, and I've done workshops, and there's kind of a standing promise for Alcohol Uncensored that I will periodically do a values workshop to help people explore this themselves as to what's important to them. I find, because I'm 5 years alcohol free now, things have changed over the years. And I find one of the big things that I had to learn to do was how to be. What did I really want in life? And those big decisions. You know, I was not one who removed alcohol from my life and kept my life exactly the same, because one of the reasons I drank was I was not happy with my life and who I was within my life, how I was turning up. So I've done a lot of work on that. And also a lot of acceptance and forgiveness of myself, and dealing with that shame we know that we've felt. And really, you know, that thing about getting to know myself, actually accepting what I know to be true rather than thinking about what I should be doing.
Yeah.
So I've done a lot of work on that, and my values now are a bit different to how they were. But the thing is with values, I think now I probably have my core values and I keep it really simple, and I try not to overcomplicate things, and I try and keep it simple. And like one of my values, which I found quite difficult because it did keep coming up for me and I kept kind of rejecting it in my head, was safety. And I realized how a lot of my decisions are about me feeling safe and how I react when I am unsafe. And that is down to trauma. And a lot of childhood trauma there. But I'm a lot more accepting that, you know, that's okay, because that's not my thing, because, you know, it's really important that I do feel safe. So,
yeah. So just quickly, when you're running the workshops within Alcohol Uncensored, because you're clearly someone who totally is in tune with themselves now, but what's the introductory chat with people on the Zooms to get them to think about what their values, how would you introduce that as a topic, is what I'm trying to sort of ask.
Well, I call the workshop values workshop. So
Are you
people
being
turn up
cheeky?
who are...
No, but I mean, like, because when I think about values, I think about all these single words like honest or humorous or, brave or confident. I don't know, but they're quite alluring words. And actually, you can look at all of them and go, yeah, I like to be that. I like to be that. How do you encourage people to identify which ones actually are important to them and which ones are just sound good?
Okay, there's two things because I think I'm more conscious of the time limits here than you are, Ian.
Go
So
on.
there's two
You've got
things.
a minute.
Firstly, okay, there's
Go.
two things. Firstly, just because something is not a value, if you were to go through a big list, and Brené Brown's got a big list of people, that can Google stuff like this and have a look if they wanted to. Just because that's not a value, it doesn't mean you're not that thing. Okay, kindness is not one of my values. I don't feel I'm unkind. Just because love isn't one of my values, love is a thing in my life, so it doesn't mean you're not that thing. Courage is not one of my values, but it doesn't mean I'm not courageous. So that's an important element. It doesn't mean you're not the thing, because otherwise we all want to be those things. So then the second one is really asking relevant questions, asking pertinent questions, and challenging yourself on it. So one of the questions would be, what would the people around you describe your values? And then another one would be, what are the people around you? What are their values? Because we are the sum of the five people we spend the most time with. And just so that you can get an opportunity to reflect. So that would be some of the questions you'd ask yourself. So you don't end up with just a beautiful wish list that as soon as any stress hits you, it's forgotten about. It's like health is one of mine because I know that it slides. I do fit some things that are really good for my health. And it's not that I'm striving for perfection, but I'm not as into it as other people are. It doesn't mean I'm healthy, but I'm not as striving into it as other people are. So that what I do as part of a workshop is there would be questions there to help you narrow it down and to know there's no right or wrong, and it's an iterative process. And the thing is, it's meant to help you. Knowing your values is just another little brick in the foundation of the house of being alcohol free. That's what it is.
Susan, we could talk for another hour. And I wish we hadn't jibber jabbered at the start, but when we had that sort of spare 10 minutes when we just thought we were fiddling on with getting the technology right, weren't we? But
Yeah, we could
oh
talk for another while yet. Ian's got
yeah.
another Zoom that he needs to be on.
I have. I have.
I know. Well, I won't be going to
Because
that
you know your values and it's not important to you. Yeah, absolutely. Susan, thank you very much. That's
Yeah.
been brilliant. And do you know what, Kelly? It's nice that
Thank
we
you.
haven't had the gas on too much, isn't it? We've just been able
Yeah.
to leave Susan to get on with it.
I never tire listening to Susan. You always get some good little nuggets from her every single time. Sometimes a bit up the arse for me. Other times it's little gold nuggets. But thank you very much, Susan. Honestly, we do really appreciate it.
Okay then. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm going to shut up. Sorry. Thank you.
Go on. No, you wanted to say something there. Go on.
Well, but I want you to be able to cut this bit off. Can you cut this bit off if you don't think it works, Kelly, for the podcast? Okay.
We have got some technological ability, haven't we, Kelly? We think we can chop it off, yeah.
Okay.
We can snip it.
Yeah.
Go on.
It really struck me, when I talked about the techniques, and I'm conscious that people who might be listening to this are trying to become alcohol free and are in the thick of it at the moment. And I can't remember where I saw it, but it was a poem, The Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. It's a very short poem, but I wrote it in my journal and it really struck me as I started to learn about alcohol because there were times, alcohol was the enemy. Like one that on a lonesome road doth walk in fear and dread. And having once turned round, walks on and turns no more his head because he knows the frightful fiend doth close behind him tread. That's
Love
it.
that.
Yes.
Love that. And I'm awful glad that it was such a nice poem because my podcast editing skills aren't that good to cut
We
it
took a chance there, didn't we? We took a
out.
chance.
Listeners, I hope you like that poem.
Oh, that's
Yeah, that
lovely.
really helped me. That really helped me because sometimes, you have to channel a bit of anger, and not at yourself. And that's the thing. Don't bloody look behind you. Don't look back. Keep going forward.
I'm glad you remember to mention that because you did say about your poem, and it shows we're cultural as well, doesn't it? It shows we're not just winging it. We've got a bit about us, a bit of depth, a bit of brevity.
Depth,
So, yeah.
well, whether it's the an us thing, Ian, is another matter. The
Well,
listeners can decide.
you have. Right, before we go, Kelly, if anybody is interested in having a bit of a blast for 30 days or whatever it is with Alcohol Uncensored, how do they go about doing it?
So if you go to the website, you can join from there, which is www dot, I don't know why I did the www, alcoholuncensored.co.uk. And you'll also find us on Instagram or Facebook. If you want to get in touch with any questions, if you're a bit kind of nervous or concerned about anything, you can get us on team@alcoholuncensored.co.uk or the chat function on the website as well.
I love that team at email address. It's just you, isn't it?
Team, so he'll need to give a team access to
Brilliant. Right, we'll leave it there. That is ace. Really enjoyed it. Hope everybody enjoys listening to what we've got to say. And I forgot I was going to promise to tell everybody what I'd say, not drinking. I'll have to do that next week. I forgot my homework, miss. Susan, thank you very much.
Bye.
Thank you, guys.
See you,
take
everyone.
care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.